is going to do something mechanical, okay, by definition. It'll enhance drying, it'll have some smart property. And this nanotech company is a good example.
But now Al is telling me that no way on earth that you keep on chopping the fiber, you have the same chemical property, and he said, no, so if that is true, and I think it's right, then it doesn't make any sense for us.
Chemical properties, if it's cellulose.
Well, but if, yeah, if you're.
Carbon properties, different.
One of the things that you said sounded like you didn't understand what I meant about the percentage of surface molecules.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to show you here is, this, you know, this is a molecule that's going this way, it's just a cross section. So in this is a 19 chain model here. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of the 19 molecules are on the surface. 12 of the 19, and so that's more than half of these molecules are on the surface in this bottle.
I thought less on the surface, more in each of them.
Well, see, as you get to bigger and bigger models, you have a smaller and smaller fraction of the molecules are on the surface.
How many molecules are in one fiber? I mean, how many molecules of cellulose are in one? How many molecules of cellulose? I mean, again, I do not fully understand. It is the lumen. I was thinking that it's the lumen really which gives the properties of carbon which we have.
Cellulose. Lumen is not important, but it's a long. It would take a long time for a molecule to diffuse out of the lumen. It's such a complex.
For example, cellulose.
But see, each one of these things is a crystallite.
Right.
Okay. And it's much bigger.
Yeah.
It's composed of smaller crystallites. It doesn't have anything to do with the lumen here. But this is already much bigger than the nanoparticles that we have. Each one of these little pieces here that you see in this drawing.
So what's the difference between this and this and the, let's say, pulp for the wood cellulose?
The cells of wood have been isolated from the lignin, but the actual individual fibers of wood aren't so terribly different. The crystalline regions are shorter. I think it's a little smaller diameter. Do you remember the details, Vince, on that? The crystallites are smaller.
Of course, they're
but it's not.
It's not
cellulose two. It's still cellulose one. It's cellulose two if it's rayon. You've converted it. You've taken the wood pulp and gone through the carbon disulfide, what we call it, viscose process, and then re-precipitated it. That makes it cellulose too. It's a completely different crystal structure.
I agree. This is what it is.
It's similar to the mercerized cotton crystal structure, but this is a very complex.
It is. That's what I'm saying. It has properties because of the structure or whatever you want to call it, which we cannot duplicate with any other fiber. Even cellulose.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about bast fibers, such as ramie, is that they're what you see as a fiber is what you might call it's a technical fiber, right? That's the operative phrase. And the actual, this is a single cell.
Yeah.
Okay. The technical fibers are actually agglomerations of cells.
Oh.
And you can break the technical fiber up, but into individual cells. Mm-hmm. And then each individual cell will have a structure similar to this. And each individual cell will have a lumen and so forth.
But that's what we call bast fiber, because of course, they're so coarse compared to this.
Well, I didn't know where the phrase bast came from.
That's because of this. It's a bundle of fibers like this.
Yeah.
It's not one cell like carbon is, it's multiple cells.
Yeah.
That's why the bast means bastard. Bast means coarse.
Okay, I didn't know what the root of the word was, so I'm glad to hear that. But
ramie, flax, jute, dissolved.
Yeah, they're all called bast fibers.
Anyway, as I said, my knowledge is so limited, I don't want to go, but the fact remains, somebody should be able to modify this cotton, not chemically, mechanically, be able to cut it into short pieces so that we can use those fibers and impregnate some other surfaces and get cartilage behavior. We should be able to do it, if it can be done.
Well, if you require a lumen, you're going to have to be careful how you cut them up.
You're going to lose it.
So, do you think there's a water molecule also in between these crystalline or water region? There are water molecules also there inside?
They're inside the fiber, but not inside the crystals.
What do you mean by inside the crystal? Fibers made out of the crystalline and the amorphous region, so.
All right, so they're in the amorphous regions.
They are in the amorphous
regions. I mean, this is a big question, but if you look at a crystal like this, Paul,
there's these, if you go to a space filling model instead of these ball and stick models, there is no space in between these things for a water molecule to fit.
Yes,
and they stick to each other well enough that
what keep cohesive? What is the force between these two?
These are called van der Waals forces in this direction and hydrogen bonding in this direction. And some of our recent work showed that the van der Waals forces are very important. And you can, if you add some cyclohexane groups, which have nothing but van der Waals forces, it completely alters the way that the molecules relate to each other.
And how did you separate them?
Well, this was cello bile, so it was just two glucose units, and then we put two cyclohexane molecules on the end. This is some synthesis work.
Let's assume for a minute, and suppose I'm able to get now only this. There's no interaction between them. Will this behave like a carbon fiber?
It's a single molecule.
So it will not?
No.
But I'm a single molecule. But,
this crystal. There's no lumen there, is there?
There's no, I know that. So this is just a molecule, like a starch or cellulose or whatever. It's just like any molecule of cellulose, that's all it is. And it doesn't have the properties like cotton fiber.
No, but there are lots of cellulose fibers.
I mean, each one has different properties. Water is associated with that crystallite. How many waters are associated with this? Is this a crystallite?
Well, this is too small for a crystallite cross-section, but if we go
it's
to
not
our,
even,
if we had a 9-chain by 9-chain array, that might be about right.
Okay. And so how many waters are associated with that?
Well, suppose you have a fiber that's equilibrated at room humidity.
You know? Right.
Okay. So you have about 5% water, something like 5% water in the fiber.
Okay.
That's one water molecule per cell of bios unit. But none of them are inside the crystal. So
right.
They're sticking on the outside.
Yeah.
But one water molecule.
Okay, so they're on the outside. They're not on the inside.
They're not in the crystal.
They're only on the outside of the crystal.
Well,
in the amorphous region, that's also
so. Now, what we found, I collaborated on an NMR, solid state NMR study with the UCLA and Gary Gamble. Was one of the other co-authors. And what we found was that when there was water, it was about 15 water molecules deep.
That was the paper you gave last year?
That Gary gave last year.
Right. Okay.
And there are plenty of nooks and crannies
right.
in that cotton fiber where you could get 15 water molecules in between some of these larger
microfibers. That's the ambient conditions.
Yeah, now what?
Excuse me one second. If you dry this fiber, will that water be gone or not? If you dry, almond dry or whatever.
I think you can dry a cotton fiber so it doesn't have any water left in it.
That water will, for 15, 18 molecules,
it's all evaporate. It's all gone. I think you can do that. I'm not sure of that.
Only if you have wicking windows.
That's where they will come from. There's no space. You said they're so compact. Where will even you to evaporate need some space to get out?
Yeah, but it would take some time. But it could happen.
What
well,
is the change?
Yeah, I mean, what would be interesting is if you could model introducing hydrophobicity. Crystallites, and then you go through a molecular dynamics of where the water goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking to do some work like that with the people at Tulane. But one of the interesting things is that under certain conditions, you can grow cotton fibers that show something like tree rings, a diurnal, you can get about 40 rings, which is the typical maturation period. So each day's worth of cellulose synthesis has a separate, distinct boundary with the next day's cellulose synthesis.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
And if you put 15 molecules of water deep in between each one of those daily layers, you would get about 5% moisture.
That makes sense. And it makes sense if one day,
ambient conditions, but when if you saturate the fiber with water.
Well, you can swell the fiber. Normally the fiber looks like a
kidney. How many water molecules will it hold, would be the question. And then at that point,
when you take a load of laundry out of the clothes washer after it's been centrifuged, it has about 100% water. In other words, a 7-pound load of dry fabric will have 7 pounds of water that you've got to get rid of with your dryer. And so how much of that is water that's in between the fibers, trapped in the yards now?
Yeah, the airspace.
Okay, right. I mean, that you haven't gotten rid of just by a mechanical centrifuging.
Right, those are bound waters that are being held by.
Well,
probably
bound water is not a good phrase there in this case.
Trapped
water in the fabric matrix, maybe.
Airspace is what they're in, rent away, and then water came there, basically. That's
But that's not a. That's only one model of your centrifuge.
Water does play one role even in the processing. That does be the growth of fiber also must be influenced by moisture.
If you give the going back to this wicking windows thing, where it's just based on increasing hydrophobicity into channels within the fabric, so you're creating canyons of hydrophobicity, irregular canyons.
How do you get
That's what wicking windows is.
How do you get chemistry? How does it work?
I mean, wicking windows?
Yeah. Mark was doing this one. How does it work?
It works by forcing the water to the surface of the fabric because of the hydrophobicity.
How do you develop hydrophobicity?
It's imprinted into the fabric with fluorohydrocarbons. Okay?
They spray.
They do a printing. It's also printed. It's not just on the surface. It's printed into it.
But it doesn't go all the way through.
I think it goes all the way. I think it goes. I believe it may not go all the way through, but it has to go.
It has to go
to below the surface, and I'm not sure how far that is. I don't even know if they know.
Well, Cotton Incorporated has given me some money to try to better understand how water can move through cotton.
Okay, this money will move through.
For that very reason, and that's why I'm saying this.
They don't know. They said people wave their hands.
Oh, I see.
But they don't
Empirically, again, they have found that some channels work better than others.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they have
that. The irregularity of the channels seems to improve the wicking. In other words, if you just have a lot of straight channels imprinted, it doesn't. But if they're irregular, maybe that adds to the surface area.
Maybe it allows you to pump it out as you move inside the surface.
It may. I mean, yeah, there could be some mechanical stuff going on there too. But they looked at different, with dyes, they looked at different printing patterns. On these things, they empirically found that, so that's how they refined their model. But it's all about hydrophobicity, forcing the water molecules away from those hydroxyls.
Because if you make 100%